Here, let me hit
But I'm
that.
not gonna get in trouble now for saying, I won't get in trouble now for saying that I had a fake ID.
No, you won't. Most of the people I've
No.
talked to used fake IDs.
Yeah.
Most of them, truly. And it was interesting because even one of the owners was like, oh, like, I don't think we ever had anyone underage in here. And I was like, there's a lot of you were underage.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, here, let me explain.
I had an ID that said I was older. I mean, we had to show an ID, so I but back then, you could get fake IDs pretty easy, and
Yeah.
nobody really looked.
No, it sounds like it. Well, here, real quick, let me tell you about how the interview sort of like works. Basically, I start things off by saying, my name's Adriana Sisko. The date is September 29th. I'm talking with Jackie today. Yeah, and then at that point, I'll ask you to tell me a little bit about yourself, which is just asking you to give me that basic autobiographical spiel that you would give anybody. So, like, oh, my name's Jackie, where I live, blah, blah, blah. And then once you do that, then I start asking the questions, which I ask a few just background questions of, like, oh, where did you grow up? And then I ask a bunch of country questions. And the interview is only as long as, like, however much you have to share, or however much you remember. So don't feel like, please don't feel like, you're being quizzed or something, and you have to like say a bunch of
No, you're
stuff.
fine. No, you're fine.
Okay, good.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. Did you hear what I said?
That's how
I'm not going to name any people's names because
yeah.
there are some people who are deceased, and I don't want to offend anybody. You know what I'm
Yeah,
saying? So.
totally. So feel free to say, oh, this person, or like a fake name, just like whatever works for you. So that's good to me.
Okay.
Yeah, so does that sound good to you? Because if so, I'll get started.
Yeah.
Okay. So, hello, my name is Adriana Sisko, and today I'm interviewing Jackie Higgins for the Country Remembering Lexington's First Lesbian Bar Oral History Project. The date is September 29th, 2021, and we are doing this interview over Zoom. I am located in my home in Lexington, and Jackie's over Zoom too. She is doing audio for this interview only because, technical issues. And Jackie, where are you located right now? Are you in Lexington or elsewhere?
I'm in Lexington. I've lived here all my life.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. And well, first to start us off, how about you share with me a little bit about yourself just in general?
Okay. I'm 60 years old. I've lived in Lexington all my life. I'm a Lexington Catholic graduate of 79. What else do you want to know? I
No.
work at Marshall's in Hamburg.
No, that's perfect. Just that general
That's
info.
my career now.
Say that again.
That's my career now. I've worked for three companies that went bankrupt up until, and this is where, and then I had to draw unemployment for a while after the third company that I worked for went bankrupt, and I was kind of, at a crossroads after 50, and had to draw unemployment. My grandmother got ill, and I was having trouble finding a job, and then I finally decided to go back to retail, which was one of the first jobs I had back when I was in my 20s. I used to work at a place called It's the Levi Place. Some of these people that are going to listen to this will probably remember that store. You're too young, I'm sure. I
Yeah,
don't
I've
know how
never
old
heard of
you are.
that. I've never heard of
Yeah, it's
that.
too young. It was back in the, it was open in the 80s. It was the first company I worked for that went bankrupt.
Oh, the first one. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So,
Great.
and then I'll let you ask questions. So I've gone on and on. So go ahead.
Oh no, you were totally fine. Thank you for sharing all that. And yeah, well, like I said, first I just do some basic background questions. You mentioned that you've lived in Lexington all your life. Were you born in Lexington as well?
Yeah. I was born at St. Joseph's Hospital, the original St. Joseph on Broadway when they did, when they birthed babies there. They don't do that anymore. It's at St. Joe East now. But I was born at the original hospital.
Oh, I see. Okay. And just in general, tell me what it was like growing up in Lexington, as a child. What was it like for you?
Well, I remember I remember back in the 60s, there was still segregation. But I mean, I remember little bits about it. I remember seeing there were still signs up that segregated whites and blacks. And I didn't, you know, I would ask questions as to why I didn't, you know, I didn't like it. And finally, eventually, you know, segregation came, you know, through back in the late 60s. I went to a Catholic grade school, St. Peter's Elementary, and then I went out, you know, to, I went to all private schools. I didn't go to any public schools or anything. So, and then went to Lexington Catholic after I went 12 years at St. Peter's. I used to go to the Strand Theater that my aunt worked at. Every day after school, she was a manager there for years. It was down on Main Street. It's not there anymore. It's been torn down. It was part of the Kentucky Theater. You know, there were like three theaters back then: the Kentucky, the Cinema, and the Strand. And I know Fred Mills through he was the manager of the Kentucky through my Aunt Catherine. Working at through the theater business. Fred Mills is a prominent businessman, you know, known in Lexington. I don't know if you know who he is. He was the manager of the Kentucky till they shut it down because of the pandemic. It's under new ownership now.
Oh, I didn't know it was under new ownership now. Oh.
Yeah, they closed it, and it's been sold and bought by some company. And we're all hoping that.
I hope Fred it's okay.
Yeah, we're all hoping that Fred Mills is kept on board, you know, because he has been the heart and soul of the Kentucky Theater for years.
Yeah. Right.
And a lot of the people that will watch this know who he is, you know. But I discovered the country. Well, we called it the Hidden Door. When I went to it, it was called the Hidden Door.
Okay, I see.
I knew that it was previously called the Country, but it was called the Hidden Door, and it was in a little shopping center, and the door said Pamela D's Wigs on the door that you would go in to go to the Hidden Door bar. So when I first went there, I was like, "Where am I going? You know, I don't. Is there really a bar in here? You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, there was. It really was a hidden door. Literally.
Literally, yeah.
I was 19 years old, and I was scared to death because I'd never been to a gay bar before. Because I had grown up, I was supposedly straight, and I didn't realize that I realized there was something different about me, and I realized that I thought that I was, you know, that I was gay, but I wasn't, you know, completely sure at that point yet. Mm-hmm. But when I started going out, I knew for sure that I was. So I can't remember who I went with. I think I went by myself the first time. And met some, you know, some people, and there were people there that I knew because I played softball in Lexington for years. And there were a lot of gay women that played softball. It was independent, just slow pitch. It wasn't college softball like they have now. Mm-hmm. My niece plays, you know, college softball, you know, but we played independent. It was called the Independent League. I played from the time I was like 13 years old until I retired in 2005 when I broke my right ankle. So I played for a long time, but we generally met girls like at the ballparks and stuff. And then people would make plans to go out. And the Hidden Door was the only, you know, gay bar, you know, around. And I just started asking questions of some of the girls that were, you know, that I thought might be lesbians. And asked them where, you know, just curious questions, you know. And they were like, Jackie, why do you want to know? Because they always thought I was straight, you know. Then they started picking up on the fact that I was curious. So, And I mean, I just started going, and like I said, I was scared to death the first time I went because I wasn't sure what it was all about. Just, you know, anybody would be. And but then, you know, I fit in, and I just started, you know, just meeting people and talking to people, and making friends. And I had a girlfriend part of the time that I was you know, going, and that relationship didn't work out. It was not a good relationship, but I'm not going to name any names or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just a bad period in my life. And I kind of, had a come to Jesus moment, you know what I'm saying? And I had to find myself. And finally did, you know, I don't know if I can remember any of the instances out there, you know, at the hidden door. I mean, we drank a lot. it never really got raided or anything. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when I was of age, and was legally able to, you know, go, I mean, I think they had people that would come and check people's IDs, but, you know, for the most part, it was fine, you know, then, and they just, the people that were underage, they made them leave. You know, back then it was different than they do things now, I think. The police kind of over, you know what I'm saying? They didn't bother too much. That and the fact that I don't know if they really even knew that we were, you know, there, you know. Marissa and JC were the owners, and they were together at the time. Have you talked to JC?
That is someone that I've been in communication with for a while, and it's looking like early November I'll be able to talk with JC, but we'll see sort of where the scheduling lines up. Obviously,
that's okay. Now, Marissa, as far as Marissa goes, I don't know if Marissa is still alive.
Okay.
Her girlfriend. I don't know if she's still alive or not.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. My friend on that gave you my number on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
She would probably know better than me whether she was or not.
Oh, okay. I see. And I have some follow-up questions for you about the country, just based on things that you mentioned. So how many years was it that you went to the country? I know you said, like, when you started, you weren't of age yet, and then, like, time goes by, and then you were of age. So how much time was that?
You know, I don't really know when they closed. Do you know when they closed?
Sometime in 1982. Yeah, 1982.
It would have been up until the time they closed.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, from 19 years of age until then.
Mm-hmm. And then, so do you remember?
1980 until 1982, I guess, when they closed.
Okay, yeah.
And then we went other places after that. There was a place called the Bungalow, which was down on the Esplanade,
mm-hmm.
Down on the corner, I think, of the Esplanade. There was a club called LMNOP's that Bradley's Picklesheimer used to, I don't know if he ran it, but he did drag down there. And I know his sister lives Picklesheimer. I'm trying to think of where else. And we used to go to the Johnny Angels, the bar complex.
Right, right.
And then later on in the 90s, it was Mark's on Main that we would go to, and Club 141. Mm-hmm. There was a place called the Circus out in Idlewild,
mm-hmm.
That we went to that played that you know, catered to, well, everybody could go. Some of these bars were just, you know, it was a mixed crowd.
Yeah, right.
And if they didn't like the atmosphere, then they left. But if they were okay with it, then they stayed, you know.
Mm.
And that's kind of like the bar is. You know, the bar, anybody can, everybody goes. And, I mean, if you don't like the atmosphere, then you, if you don't know what you've walked into, you leave, you know, basically.
It's very true. Just yeah. So tell me about... Well, that was a lot of really good information, first of all. But second of all, tell me about just your recollection of the inside of the country, as in you walk in, what does it look like? What do you see? You know, what are the
physical... I don't really remember, to be honest with you. I mean, it just was dark. It really wasn't really well lit. There was a bar, of course, you know, but I can't remember, honestly. I can't get a vivid picture in my mind. Has anybody been able to answer that question?
Oh, I ask it to everyone. A lot of people have answered it. I just like to get sort of everyone's okay. kind of like perspective, because different people remember different things, I've noticed.
We did a lot of dancing, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember there being, you know, Michael Jackson. There was this, there was a black girl that was a lesbian, and she would dress up as Michael. She did a very good Michael Jackson impersonation. I cannot remember her name. She played softball, but she did a very good Michael Jackson impersonation. She would dress up like him, and she could dance just like him. And that was always a lot of fun when we had like nights that were like theme nights and stuff. A lot of dancing. I just remember, you know, we danced a lot. Back those days, and just socialized a whole lot. It was just a place to dance and drink and socialize and pick up women. I had a few one night stands through my exploits in just those 3 years, you know, that I went. I couldn't tell you anybody, you know, I'm not going to mention names, but I mean, there was a lot.
Oh no, absolutely.
Those were wild days for a lot of us though. I don't, you know, and nowadays people think they look back and they will say, well, so-and-so was wild and, you know, she was with a lot of women, but we all were. I don't know how they can pick and choose, you know, a certain person and say, you know, I mean, now my life, the last relationship I had was 15 years ago and I haven't been with anybody since. So I've been pretty much alone for, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not wild anymore. I don't even hardly go out with the pandemic going on, you know, that is even deterred it even more, you know?
Right.
And I'm happy with myself now. I was searching for something back then. Mm-hmm. And when you're young, you think you have to have somebody in your life. But as you get older, you realize that you have to be happy with yourself. You know, in order to be happy with someone else, you have to be happy with yourself. You don't have to have someone to reaffirm your existence. You know, that has been something that I have learned. You know, and you're not going to miss something if you don't go out. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yes, you can meet people and meet new people and all that kind of stuff. But I just felt like back when I was younger, I was going to miss something if I didn't go out. Then therein also the fact that back then, when you're younger, you can hold your liquor, you know, a lot better and you don't have as bad a hangover the next day either. And I can't do that anymore. And it's expensive to go out now because of, you don't drink and drive. You have to call for an Uber to go out. Because if you have one or two drinks, the cops can pull you over and you're in trouble. You know, it's just a big bummer. Growing up, back then you don't think about it. You know, I drank and drove back then and we didn't even think about it, you know, and now it's like, it can ruin your life. You know, it could have been too, but you kind of throw caution to the wind when you're younger, but when you're older, you just take a lot more things into consideration. Mm-hmm. You know, like when the AIDS epidemic hit, even though I'm a lesbian, I worried about, you know, I think that slowed a lot of people's like promiscuousness, you know, down as well, even for the lesbian population, not just the male population. It affected us all. You know, recently, I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but Dr. Fauci,
uh-huh.
he was responsible. I don't know if you've seen the documentary or not about him, the work he did with AIDS and gay men. He was responsible for them putting in place where they used gay men were volunteering to be AIDS. They were volunteering for them to do research on them, and they weren't going to do it at first. And Dr. Fauci established a relationship in the gay community with gay men. and they trusted him. And he is responsible for helping with, you know, the AIDS back, you know, back when everybody was, nobody wanted to touch it or nobody wanted to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
But a lot of people don't realize, you know, that he was a big advocate. And helped the gay community and helped, you know, with AIDS, trying to find, you know, a cure for AIDS and got all the studies started with the men that were volunteering right and left for, because they wanted, you know, to find a cure for it. And they were the best test subjects, you know. So a lot of people don't know that, but I found that out just from where I watch, you know, I think MSNBC had a thing on it one night. I think Rachel Maddow, the Rachel Maddow show.
Oh, yeah. And,
yeah, I'm very political, if you haven't already figured that out. And I watch, I'm a Democrat.
That's okay, because I am too.
I did not like Trump at all. Mm. I mean, this pandemic, I mean, we'd have been in a lot better shape if we hadn't had him as president when because he just totally made it political from the very beginning. And he said it was a hoax and it was something the Democrats had cooked up and, you know, all that crap. You know, I think we would be in a lot better shape than we are now, because there's so many people that followed him. And I know there were already people that did it, but he just brought a lot of people out of the woodwork. You know, I mean, and gave them a voice, and they felt like that they could have the courage to come out of the woodwork and the prejudices and all that crap. And it's affected everybody. It hasn't just affected the different races. It's affected the gay community as well. I mean, he was not an advocate for LGBTQ at all. I voted for Biden.
Actually, this connects with one of the questions I have. One of the questions I always ask is, you know, think about Lexington during the time of the country. So like when you went early 80s, you know, going to the Hidden Door early 80s, Lexington then, and then Lexington now. You know, when you're comparing
The gay community hasn't changed that much, but we're a very accepting community.
Tell me more about just the difference. What's different? What's the same between then and now?
Anyone was allowed in a gay bar. It didn't matter what color of your skin or anything. And we all embraced each other. And it's the same now as it was then. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that part has changed. I mean, the LGBTQ community has always been open. And the only thing I think maybe that has changed a little bit was the divisions between the gay men and the gay women. Mm. I think that we are more unified now than we were. I think there was a kind of a line there with gay men and gay women, and particularly, you know, lesbians and just gay men. I think that there was some, just maybe a little bit of like attitude, you know, back then, but I think we're more unified now as a whole, as a society.
Yeah. What makes you say, I've heard this from others before. So you're certainly not alone in knowing this and thinking this. So I'm just asking for the purposes of the interview, what made you feel that in the past there was sometimes a bit of a line between, you know, gay men and lesbians? What sort of gave you that impression?
I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to say exactly. Maybe not so much in Lexington. Maybe I'm just speaking of it as a society in whole. Because I mean, I have known gay men my whole life, you know, and made friends with gay men. There are some women and some gay men probably that don't really mix that much with, you know what I mean? But I don't think it goes on as much as it did. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I know if you understand what I'm trying to say or not. I don't know what to pinpoint the exact difference, but maybe it's just the fact that men the gay men were, some of them are more feminine than some of us lesbians. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like a divide, maybe a misunderstanding, you know, we didn't understand each other as much. And now there's different, you know, where people are more willing to be open about who they are now, maybe, I think. Does that maybe make more sense? And people are willing to open up more?
Yeah.
Because we were more in the closet back then, you know, and we're afraid to speak out. And maybe you didn't know if you were talking to someone who was gay or not. And now, I mean, people will, you don't have to hide it like you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. No, you completely make sense. I'm interested in your thoughts. So you are all good.
The whole culture has changed.
The whole culture.
It's like it's cool to be gay now, as opposed to something that is taboo. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Except in religious circles. You know, there's always going to be religions who look, you know, down their nose and persecute, because they're always at Pride holding up their signs, you know. and it's infuriating because they, you know, they sin the same as we do. And I mean, I'll tell you an experience I had. I was having doubts about my sexuality back when I was in my 20s and right around 30. And because I grew up Catholic.
Okay.
And my grandmother kind of basically threw me out and gave me an ultimatum that if I was going to be gay, that I couldn't live at home. And if I wanted to be like that, I had to leave. Okay. That was an ultimatum that was given to me when I was like about 19 or 20 years old. And I came back home because I had a bad relationship and I sort of lost my identity and lost my way. That's what I was talking about, where I had to come to Jesus moment. Okay.
Right.
And I just was in a bad relationship. I jumped too quick, you know, didn't know what I was getting myself into. It was a bad relationship. And I came home. My grandmother thought that I was coming home to change my ways. And I said, look, no, I'm pretty sure I'm still the same person, you know. And I went and talked to my priest at church. And at the time, it was Father Wellington. It was St. Peter's, was my church downtown on Bar Street. And come to find out, he had a sister who was gay. And so he knew firsthand, you know, from talking his sister, you know, where I was coming from. And I told him what my grandmother had said, that I was going to go to hell for being gay. And he said, "You're absolutely not going to hell for being gay." He explained to me that it's no more or no less a sin in God's eyes before marriage. It's the same sin, whether you're with a man or a woman, woman and woman, or a man and a woman, you know what I'm saying? Which made me, in our religion, it made me feel better, because I thought that God would see it as more sin from the way that it was kind of presented to me, like people looking down their nose at you and the taboos back then, you know what I'm saying? Like I was some weirdo, which I realized then, you know, after I had talked to my priest, which I know that's not God, but in our Catholic church, if you grow up Catholic with a faith, you understand that you go through the priest. You know what I'm saying? As far as with our religion, he's a symbol in the church. He's not God, but it's a symbol that you talk to. It made me feel, I can't tell you how much better it made me feel. You know what I'm saying? Just by him simply telling me that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in tears when I left. Because I felt like that I couldn't be religious or have God in my life. You know what I'm saying? The way my grandmother had made me feel, she kept telling me, "You're going to go to hell for being," you know. And I'm not trying to say she was a mean person. She wasn't. It was just the belief that she was taught when she, you know, and
no,
she
I
held
haven't.
On to.
Yeah.
It's just a taboo thing. And in the heat of the moment, you say things you don't mean. You know what I'm saying? She just would get mad about it and upset about it. And she was scared for me. You know what I'm saying? But after I talked to my priest, I felt so much better. And I got on the right path and just found myself. You know what I'm saying? And here I am today. So, and I'm happy with who I am. There's no doubt in my mind who I am, even though I'm not in a relationship, you know what I'm saying? But I know I'm a gay woman. I don't know what kind of label that I'd ever put on myself. Because, you know, we're so big on labels these days, as far as whether you're a lipstick lesbian, whether you're a stud, or whether you're
It's funny you would mention that, because I was about to ask, during the time of the country.
I have no idea, because I'm totally out at work, and the girls at work would tell you that they couldn't classify me in any kind of a, you know what I'm saying? I'm just me. I'm just Jackie.
Do you remember other people talking about stuff like that, though, like butch femme, you know, that kind of thing?
Talk about it, and I've had people ask me that, and I don't know, because I could be a top or a bottom, you know what I'm saying, depending on the other person. And I don't dress really one way or the other. I don't wear leather. I don't wear like chains or anything like that, but I'm more comfortable in men's pants for the most part, because I'm low waisted and they just fit me better.
Mm-hmm.
I wear like men's jeans, but I do own some, I mean, I have some women's jeans, and I can dress up. I mean, I don't really like to wear a dress, but I mean, I can, but if I have to, if the occasion calls for it, like a funeral, or, you know, I don't wear dresses to church or anything like that. And I don't dress up to work. We can wear jeans and tennis shoes and a t-shirt, you know, it just has to be a plain t-shirt. It can't have like stream, you know, like logos and all that, you know, kind of stuff on it. Like, it can't be concert t-shirts or anything like that. It has to be like a solid t-shirt. So I don't have to dress up for work. I wear makeup. I'm not wearing any today. For this interview, I didn't put any on. But I wear makeup every day to work, but I don't put a whole lot on. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you classify me as.
No, you completely answered my question. Basically, the question was like, oh, like, do you ascribe to any of that stuff, which you answered? And also, you know, at the time of the country, did people like talk about these kind of ideas or like use these words? And you answered that too, so it was perfect.
And you know, some of those identified as being a butch or a dyke or lipstick lesbian, and I mean, some you can tell by looking at someone, but then again, when you're with somebody, how do you know whether you're going to be a top or a bottom, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it depends on the person. And I think that kind of would I guess I've had this idea in my head, if you're more butch, you're more of the top type person, but is that right or wrong? Or I mean, I guess that's just what I've been taught to believe over the years. I guess there's different kinds of butches, though. You know, there are butches that don't necessarily have to just be in control, you know what I mean, and not. Because there's some, I read lesbian novels, you know what I'm saying? And they identify there's different ways that different women identify in the different lesbian novels and stuff that you read. And I guess it probably has to do with the authors themselves, you know, that write them. I don't know, do you read any lesbian novels? Let me ask you, what do you identify as?
I'm gay.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. The books. I've definitely read like lesbian books, but not really like lesbian romance novels. No.
You haven't? Well, you're missing out, girl.
Well, tell me about the genre of literature. Tell me about the lesbian romance. I mean, I assume they're romances just by the way that you worded
they
it.
They are. It's all lesbian romances, but it's lesbic, is what it is. And I get it on my Kindle. There's different, I have a lot of friends on Facebook that are lesbian novelists. They accept friends, you know, all the time on Facebook. And I'm trying to think of some of the, the authors. Mm-hmm. Since I have your email, I can send you some different books that you could read.
Send me a text, you know, totally.
Yeah. I'll send you some, different books and stuff that I would recommend that, were really good. There are pirate lesbian novels. There are, murder mystery lesbian novels. There are historical lesbian novels. There are science fiction lesbian novels. There is every genre that you could imagine in lesbian novels. Whatever your taste is, I am damn sure you can find something as far as the type of storyline you want. You know what I mean? It's not all just about the lesbian relationship.
Yeah.
It's not all just like lesbian, like porn written in, you know what I mean? And type set, you know, on paper. There's some lesbian authors that don't write, graphic. It's kind of fade to black, you know what I'm saying? And then there's some that get pretty, you know, that get kind of graphic with describing the lesbian sex. You know, as you can tell, I'm not a shy person, so, you know, I'm not afraid to answer questions.
No, not at all. Yeah, so definitely send me some recommendations. That's awesome.
But yeah, you need to, I'll send you some different authors and stuff and some different names of books and stuff that, you know, I don't know. What are you interested in? Do you like murder? Do you like football?
I think the mystery was the most appealing to me, the mystery one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Mystery. But anything really, just anything that you feel is like, oh, like this is a really cool story. That's also cool too. Yeah. Because I just,
Do you read at all?
Do
you read at all?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what do you read? What kind of books do you read? I mean, you read the mystery type, is that what you're saying? I mean, do you have certain...
Not usually. I'm usually a sci-fi person, but in all honesty, a lot of the stuff I read has to do with, like, my program, because I'm in a gender studies PhD program. So I do like a lot of like academic.
Oh, you're kidding. So you don't have a lot of free time to read frivolous stuff. You're kidding.
But I mean, I do like to have like things that are fun to read like on the side though. Yeah. So okay. I'm definitely game. All right. So I have some follow-up questions for you. So yeah. So do you remember ever seeing any men at the country, gay men, straight men, you know, whatever kind of man at the country or the hidden door?
Whatever kind of man. Yeah. I mean, there were some guys that came. I mean, they didn't turn men away at the door, you know. I mean, there were some men that would come, but they were usually friends in the gay, you know, in the gay community or gay men, you know. There, not a lot, but it was mainly men that were gay because they didn't want anybody causing trouble. You know what I'm saying? It's like girls and boyfriends didn't really come. You know, wasn't that kind of scenario.
Yeah, yeah. And do you remember there being any membership cards or like a cover charge to go into the hidden door?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't recall there being anything. Yeah.
Yeah, from what I've learned in the interviews, it seems like that later portion, as in the time that like you went when it was a hidden door, they like weren't really doing that anymore. It was more of an early days kind of thing, from what I have learned.
Yeah, no, when I went, it wasn't like that, and I don't know how long it was open as the country. Do you know that date?
Yeah, it opened in 78, closed in 82. It wasn't around a long time. It really
that
wasn't.
That was just a couple years before I started going then, because I graduated in 79 and I went to UK and joined a sorority. I was a Pi Phi at UK, and that was when what pushed me over the edge when I was at the Pi Phi house and naked women were walking through the halls, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm in trouble.
You were.
The girls would walk because we were all girls and they didn't think anything about it. And you know, some of these women were really pretty, you know, if you picture sorority girls, you know what I'm saying? And this, these one girls, I mean, they weren't like modest a lot of them were, and they would walk through the hall with a towel wrapped around their waist and the top, nothing, you know. And I was like, I thought my eyes were going to pop out of my head. And I was like, ah, you're in trouble, Jackie. At that point, up till that point, I thought, yeah, this is just a, you know, a fantasy kind of thing. And I can maybe do it once and I'll be over it. And I was like, no, not going to happen. And then I wound up bunking. We stayed in the, I don't know if you know anything about sororities or not, but we would have, when we did Rush, where you pick new members, mm-hmm. The pledges had to stay, like the new members, we were involved in Rush for the next, you know, the next semester. And we would stay at the sorority house and we had to sleep with, like, we had to bunk up with people. And even say, you know, I mean, I wound up bunking with somebody I was attracted to. And I did not get any sleep. I didn't try anything. I didn't do anything. But I didn't get any sleep. And that's when I knew I was damn sure in trouble and I needed to start seeking out something to do about it, because I just was, you know what I mean? I couldn't hold it in any longer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, is that feeling sort of what prompted you to the time that, like, you went home and you were sort of questioning some things and then you talked to the...
No, this was before I started going out to the... this was in 79. I went to college and joined a sorority before I started going to the Hidden Door. 19 was when I withdrew from college the next year early because I got mono. And I had to withdraw because I was so sick with mono. But, I withdrew from college. I got withdrawal passings in all my classes. So I was still in good standing. And after I recovered from that, I had just made up my mind that I was going to try to, you know what I mean?
I was just curious, like, what
and dive into the lifestyle, you know what I'm saying? Or what, you know, you do to try to, the curiosity gets the best of you, you know what I'm saying? And then I, this girl that I looked up to that I played ball with, and we're still friends to this day, and she lives here in Lexington. I'm not going to say her name because I don't want to embarrass her. And, but anyway, she told me about the Hidden Door. We went to movies and stuff and went out a couple times, and she had been a crush of mine, and she was my first. And she told me about the Hidden Door, and that was who I met at the Hidden Door when I first started going there. And then I eventually met the girl that I wound up being with. It was didn't wind up being a good relationship. So my first was actually a crush that I had. So that was a good experience. My first, experience. And then, initially when I got with the other person, it was fine, but then people show their true colors after you're with them for a while. I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. You know? Yeah, fair enough.
We've all had bad relationships. We can all probably have the same kind of story, you know? I guess we've all had bad relationships at some point in our life, but you learn from your mistakes and you move on.
Yeah, it seems like, I know you mentioned earlier that, like, there's certain things that you don't remember, like, you know, specifics about the way things look, but it does seem like you remember quite a bit of just, like, the lived experience of going there and just what was happening in your life and your family.
I just don't remember inside what it looked like in there. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I just can't. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, that's kind of fine. It's a question I ask everybody, so there's no worries about it. But I am curious to know, do you have any sort of favorite stories or memories or feelings, recollections about the country? As in just like a map, a sea of sort of like memories and feelings, just anything where you're like, oh yeah, like I remember that. That was a really good night. Or, you know, I remember that. That was a big moment.
I remember I hooked up with a girl there one night who was, and I don't remember her name, but we hooked up and we, spur of the moment, took off to the gorge that night, and we stopped on the interstate at the and looked where it goes over the Red River, and we stopped and you know, looked where the moon was. The moon was just like right up above, shining down on the Red River. And then we went on to the gorge, and we camped in the gorge and made love under the stars in sleeping bag. And we didn't get together anymore after that. It was just like kind of a one night kind of thing. And it was just kind of magical and just, you know, just kind of carefree and fun and, you know, free spirit kind of thing. But that was one of my fondest memories of the Hidden Door.
So you all had met.
I couldn't tell you what her name was now. I mean, that's awful to say, but you know, we had a lot of fun, and it was just a kind of a magical night, you know.
Yeah.
Just in, you know, under the stars in the gorge, we were like chopping wood. She had like a little hatchet with it. We chopped wood made a fire and everything. We could have gotten mugged and buried in the gorge somewhere. My husband told me, my God, what in the hell? I said, well, we were high.
Yeah.
Smoking, you know, we smoked a little weed. We drank. We just took so many more chances. Like I was saying before, when you were younger, you know what I mean? Wild days. But it was fun. And that was one of my fondest memories.
Yeah.
I was a bad girl that night, but that was fun.
Yeah, definitely.
She knew what she was doing. She was more of an outdoorsy type than I was. She you know, knew what, you know, as far as she'd done that kind of thing before, been camping, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was fun.
Okay. And what would have been sort of, because I know you, for a period at least, you went to the Hidden Door, it sounds like decently often. What would a typical night at the Hidden Door be like? So like you arrive, and what would the typical night be like in terms of like, what would you usually get up to doing?
Just socializing and dancing and, just, I don't know. I mean, we all went there to meet women, you know, I mean, it was a good place to meet. Back because we were all young, and there were always people cruising looking for, you know, companionship and stuff. I mean, it was kind of a hookup place as far as I was concerned, and I was young and new to the whole thing too, so I was kind of wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, you know what I'm saying, at the time. You got to consider the fact that in those 3 years, I had just come out, and nobody even had known that I existed, you know what I'm saying? And I mean, and I was told that I was attractive. You know what I'm saying? And so I didn't really have any trouble finding companionship. Like I said, those were my wild days.
Oh, I see. And
I'm not like that anymore. I'm not like that anymore. I wouldn't even know how to approach a woman now. And even, you know, to even ask them out. I'm just different than I was then. I don't know whether it's just because I've changed in my older, you know, and then plus you are not as confident when you get older, and you don't feel like you're as attractive, baby. You know what I'm saying? And the confidence factor, and the fact that you're young, and that I was new to the whole thing, that probably played into it a lot. But it was all just a big whirlwind of fun and adventure for me at the time.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I mean, it just was. I don't know if other people that you have talked to had the same experience. It probably not, because some of them had already knew they were gay and had been out and had, you know what I'm saying? I came out late when I was 19, and it just, and for all practical purposes, everybody thought I was straight up until then, you know, cause I mean, I dressed differently then. I dressed up, all the time, and, you know, looked more feminine, you know, the way I dressed and everything, and just was searching for an identity too. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I didn't really know who I was either at the time. I just knew that I was attracted to women, and you know, you get it. It's experimental. It was. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I mean, I think it was just, that's why it's a lot of it's a blur.
Yeah, no, totally. You know? And you mentioned that you people went to the country, you went to the country to, or Hidden Door to meet women. And I was curious to, which obviously that makes sense. But I was curious, was the country like the best place to meet other women?
That was the only place, really, hon. That was really the only lesbian bar that I can recall.
Oh, it was the only one. Yeah, it was.
It was the only one, baby, and you really couldn't meet anybody down at the bar. It was more men back then. I mean, women could go, but it was just known as just more of a men. That's where I said the separation factor played in. You know what I mean? We didn't really commingle as much. You know, then drag shows started being a thing that, you know, that women loved to go to. It started, I know that gay women have always kind of watched drag, you know, from the Stonewall, you know what I'm saying, back in the Stonewall days and everything. But just from what I have read, mainly, you had your real butch women, who were more brazen, who weren't afraid to, I guess, identify. I mean, and it was obvious that they were gay. You know what I'm saying? And then you had your men who were flamboyant, and then you had drag queens. That's the way I kind of remember the culture back in the 60s and the way Stonewall was described. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't as... People who were afraid to come out, you know what I'm saying? And you're just regular, normal, everyday, they were afraid of being found out and being ostracized and criticized, because Stonewall was a perfect example. I don't know if you know the history behind all that. I mean, they literally would beat, the police would beat gay men with batons, just for being in a gay bar, and women as well, for being butch looking. I mean, it was a horrible, horrible, you know, time. And then Stonewall, we fought back. You know, I mean, the way that I read it, a woman, a butch woman, actually fought back with the police, because that way they were mistreating, you know, the patrons of the club and stuff. A butch woman stepped up.
Yeah.
And I cannot remember her name, but if you read the history,
Stormé DuVernay, Stormé DuVernay, Stormy DuVernay. Yeah. She, super butch. I've seen pictures of super butch, seen pictures of her. You can Google them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just was a very sad, people just were so, it wasn't just, blacks were persecuted. We were persecuted. Anybody different was persecuted. Asians were persecuted. It just, and that's what Trump fucking reminded me of. He brought all that shit, the shit of the world back into the picture. The hatred, that's what he represented to me. And that's all he will ever represent to me. He was a horrible, horrible person. I mean, he catered to all that, all of that. And it brought all that full circle back to me. And I got involved with politics and really was, I never really, really got that much as far as involved in politics until Trump was elected. And, buddy, I did my research, started doing my research, and I was watching everything that was going on. All of a sudden, I woke up and I was like, this is just, because it brought everything back from the 60s. I was a child, but I still saw all this stuff. I mean, I remember when John F. Kennedy was killed. I was 3 years old, but I remember, because our family's Catholic, and I remember my family crying and watching the TV and me sitting in front of the TV, and we're Democrats too. I was named after Jacqueline Kennedy. My mom was literally pregnant with me the same time that Jacqueline Kennedy was pregnant with John Kennedy, who died, you know, he was born in November of 60 and I was born in January of 61. So I was named after Jacqueline Kennedy because it was a different name at the time. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, Trump brought all that crap back to the surface, and all, that's what I meant by saying that all these idiots come out of the woodwork that were prejudiced. And you know, I would talk to my sister about it, but she doesn't identify as much with it as I can, because I'm one of the minorities that these groups hate. You know what I'm saying? Or we are. We're one of the minorities that these people with all these prejudices and stuff. And the January 6th thing, I don't know if there'll ever be any kind of true justice that is given. You know what I'm saying? The person who's responsible, I don't know if they'll ever hold him accountable, or they'll ever be able to prove that, you know, prove it. But I hope they do. And he, because he needs to go to jail. He just needs to go to jail. He spread so much hatred, and just disunity, and our democracy is at stake right now. I mean, literally, our democracy is at stake. The way that all the Republicans are, you know, still backing him and his beliefs, and they bow down to him. And I hate Mitch McConnell. He's horrible too. He's just right there on the fence, just playing devil's advocate, you know. Whatever is good for him is which way he leans. You know what I'm saying? And he's just as bad as, I mean, maybe not quite as bad as Trump, but he's one of the instigators.
You mentioned, anyway, you mentioned the, you know, like sort of bigotry, the police, government, you know, all these kind of themes. And it got me thinking, how safe did you feel? Like, just personally, how safe did you feel at the country? Were you all ever harassed in any way? Did police ever stop by? What was going on?
Not that I remember, no. We weren't harassed there. But I have talked to gay men who have been harassed before. But I mean, I personally have not ever been harassed by the police for being gay or anything like that.
Do you have any recollection of, like, so did you, I guess I'm just kind of like inferring this from what you're saying, but did you, well, was I the country like a safe place?
What now?
I was asking, if the country felt like a safe place then, because it sounds like you were.
It did. It felt like a safe place.
Yeah.
If anything ever happened, I mean, I wasn't there. I don't know has anybody said anything about anything like that happening when we were there? I don't recall anything.
Yeah, not much. Yeah, definitely. Plenty of people were like, wait, what happened? You know, like they never, you know, saw anything.
No, I don't recall anything ever happening.
Yeah. And outside of the country,
I was just speaking in general as like our society has been, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Not from personal experience.
Oh, of course. Yeah. There was like one or two people who mentioned sort of early days in the country, police stopping by. So that's why I tend to ask about that. It doesn't seem that it happened as much later. But yeah, what you were saying just kind of, you know, reminded me of all that. Okay. And you mentioned, what was I going to say? Oh, I remember. So obviously the country was the only women's, you know, solely lesbian focused kind of bar. Were there any other spaces, whether it was, you know, softball, people's houses, house parties, were there any other spaces where you could go and hang out with all women?
JC and Marissa had parties at their house every now and then. They lived on up on Gale Drive and off Eastland Parkway. They would have parties at their house every now and then, and they'd invite, you know, people to come and party at their house. And then different people had just had parties, you know, that they'd say, oh, I'm going to have a party at my house. You know, some of the girls that would go, and we would just have a, you know, party at somebody's house. You know, it was just like word of mouth, you know, whoever wanted to have people over. And sometimes we would, after we'd leave the hidden door, we would party, you know, into the night. Like I said, I was young then, so I mean, I could stay up and party, you know, and with the best of them. So I don't do that now.
So have you stayed, it sounds like to an extent you have you stayed in touch with people who used to go to, the Hidden Door or the Country, like in the years and
Yeah, I
months
mean,
they something?
I'm still friends with a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, I'm Facebook friends, and I mean, we still keep in touch and talk every now and then. Or I run into them in town because they still live here, but not, I don't like socialize or go out with any of them anymore. We don't do that. None of us really go out that much. I mean, we're most of the girls are, some of the women are older than me that went there at the time, and then or they're my age, or they're just 2 or 3 years younger than me. One of the girls that went there is my hairdresser. She went there back in the day, and she's a little bit younger than me. She's a couple years younger than me, I think. She's my hairdresser. It's a small world, isn't
It
it?
is a small world.
Yeah, she's my hairdresser.
Oh,
She
sorry.
actually helped me one night. I was gonna get whipped by somebody. I don't even remember their name, who it was or anything, but I must have was talking to her girlfriend or something, and Becky stepped in between us and kept me from getting my butt beat. So she was my savior one night, but we've been friends for a long time.
Oh, you mean do you mean
We call it the
Becky? Do you mean Becky Rodas or a different Becky?
no, not I know Becky wrote us from those days, but this is a different Becky.
Oh, okay. I was just curious if it was the same person because I interviewed like other Becky a
No,
few days ago.
it's a different Becky. She's a little bit younger than me.
Oh,
But
okay.
she was going there, I think, when she was even younger than before me,
Wow.
So,
Yeah.
but she didn't play softball or anything, but she was, she'd go to the games and stuff. And
Okay, yeah. And how was it you heard, because I it's kind of like it's hard to remember. How was it you heard about this project again? I know someone got like gave me your name or something.
Julie.
Oh, Julie. Yeah, she gave a lot of names. Okay, that
So
makes sense.
she called me. We have each other's she got my phone number on Messenger, and then I gave her my phone number, and she called me, and she asked me if it was okay if she gave you my name first. And I said, well, sure, yeah, that's fine. I don't remember. I told her, I said, I don't remember a whole lot from about describing the place or anything like that, but I mean, I don't, if I can help at all, I mean, I think we've talked about a lot of other stuff too. It just kind of helps you gain kind of some insight on, where
Absolutely.
we all were and our thoughts and, just the way we all felt back in those days. And,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
and I
No.
don't know if the young people today that go out, if they do the same thing that, you know what I'm saying, that are going out at that same age in this day and age. It'd be interesting to find out what their habits and their why they go out. A lot of people are, like have girlfriends and stuff, that are paired up these days. But then again, there's young people that go out looking, I don't know if they do it as, like what we did, or if that was just an age. I don't know. I mean, do you? I mean, I don't know how old you are. I mean, and I don't know what your habits are, but I mean, you know what I'm getting at, what I'm trying to say?
Oh,
I
I
mean,
mean,
if they did the same thing.
some of you all were like really young, like really young. I personally, in terms of like at
Promiscuous?
like gay bars, I don't see anyone that's that young. Definitely not. I guess it's
Really?
different now. I guess like it's different now with the carding thing is so much more detailed than it used to be. They're like scanning the cards and stuff. You can't, it's just
Yeah,
different.
but some people were probably 16 years old and going there, probably. I don't know what your experience has been as far as how what the youngest age was, but I mean, I was probably old compared to when I first started going there compared to what some of the other ones were, probably.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like there were, like, some of the people I've interviewed, there were a few that were, you know, just, like, early 20s, kind of, like, average. There are definitely people 15, 16, 17. Yeah.
I don't mean that young. I just mean the habits of the young gay people in general. I don't mean like underage.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know about that teenage stuff.
No, I don't mean that. I just meant like if they go out like we did and you know, like just hook up with different women and stuff like what we all did, or
some of them do, some of them don't.
I don't know if it's done that much anymore or not.
Yeah, some of them do, some of them don't. But I will say that one difference is that there isn't a women's bar, so
right,
you know, you got to, yeah. So I'd say that's like a bit different. I'd say that like a lot of that sort of women lesbian relating will happen, you know, in more creative spaces or like in those mixed spaces, like trying to find each other. It's definitely the whole country thing has been really interesting to me for a lot of reasons, but one of them is like, to me, that's such a foreign idea, the idea of having like a all full on, you know, like women's bar. This is a lesbian bar. That would be awesome. Like, I would love that.
Basically a Sappho bar, right?
Yeah, no, literally. And you know, that gets me thinking,
like an Isle of Lesbos, right?
Yeah,
heard of the Isle of Lesbos or whatever.
Yeah. when Julie called you and, you know, asked permission to, you know, give your name and all that kind of stuff, and you learn that there's someone doing, you know, some kind of project about the country, what did you think of that? Like, were you not surprised? Were you surprised? What did you think of just like learning about the existence of like this kind of project?
Oh, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, that somebody, how did you get wind of the place in the first place?
Yeah. There's one sort of scant mention of the country. There was a guy, Jeff Jones, gay, who he did a like PhD dissertation about the history of like queer Lexington, and, you know, talking about all the different bars and all different places. And there's like a paragraph in there about the country / Hidden Door. So there's that mention. And then I knew people in the Faulkner Morgan archive. That's the archive where these interviews are like going to be stored. I knew people there, and they knew that I do a lot of oral history interviewing, and my focus is like gay stuff, lesbian stuff, more specifically, essentially. And so it's just kind of a shoo-in. It was like, oh, like, you talk to a lot of lesbians, and oh, we need to add more lesbians to our archive and our collection. So it's just kind of like a natural collaboration. Yeah. Yeah.
And you knew who Bradley Ticklesheimer was, didn't you, when I mentioned it?
I did, just because, like, I've been around all these like, gay historians, and they'll talk about him, you know?
He's moved back to Kentucky, don't you?
No, I didn't know
that. Not in Lexington, but he's moved back to Kentucky. He's not in California anymore. He moved back. He's in, like, Paducah or something, I think, or somewhere, you know, he's in some other city in Kentucky. I think Paducah? I'm not exactly certain of that, but he has moved back to Kentucky, because I talked to a couple fellows, the gay fellows that come in store. I have a lot of gay customers that come to Marshall's, and people that I've seen around the community that I don't always know their first name. You know what I mean? Just through the years, and you know, I tell them who I am, and oh yeah, you look familiar. You know, we all look familiar to each other. You know. And these fellows go down to the down on Lime, the crossings. The two lesbians own the crossings now.
Yeah. Crossings. Yeah.
I heard that. Is that true?
That is also what I've heard. I've heard it enough that I think it's probably true. It's interesting because obviously, you know, Crossings, like from what I know, when it started, was more of like a leather bar. So it's definitely.
And you should have heard what some of the guys said, that they made fun. A couple guys that I talked to said that somebody made a funny comment that it has gone to the, oh God, it's going to be a pussy bar or something like that now, instead of a leather bar or something like that. And I found out last night, I was like, they can't change the whole culture of that place. You know what I mean? It always has had regulars, you know, that has come there. It's not so much as much of a, I thought of it, when I first heard there was a leather bar, it sounded kind of scary to me. And if, you know, kind of, you know what I mean? I mean, but when I went there, it wasn't at all what I pictured, you know, because I went in during one of the Pride celebrations, you know, downtown. And I was like, well, this place isn't at all what somebody described it as, you know? And and it's right next to that other, that what is that place that's right next to it? Is it an Irish bar?
I can't remember the name, but I like see it in my head, and I've walked by it just so many times.
There's a lot of straight people that go in the crossings. It's kind of crossover, you know, people go in and out of both places, you
that's
know.
So funny. Yeah, that's so true, because like whenever I'd walk by the Irish bar, I would like never go in there because I was like, oh, you know, that seems like more of a straight bar. So it's really funny to know that like they're going into the crossings bar.
And during Pride, there's all kinds of people, you know, I mean, straight people that I know that just love Pride, you know, that love going down there and because they just love, you know what I mean? The whole idea that people can be who they want to be, you know, I mean, and they're accepting.
Yeah.
Not everyone is like that. I mean, but there's being more and more people that are, seeing the light, but I mean, it's okay to love whoever you want to, you know, I mean, it's not such a horrible thing. Love is love, you know, it doesn't matter what gender it is, what, you know, I mean, I think that
totally,
it's just that people are being more educated now, and they're more open to being educated instead of just your stereotypes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Education is the key. People need to be educated, and people like you who are doing this, that is, you know, that's a step in educating people. You know what I'm saying? I mean, anybody who does any kind of a dissertation on anything that about our culture, our world, I mean, is definitely a step in the right direction, in my opinion.
Thank you.
You know, education is the key. You know, that and knowing someone who's gay. Because 9 times out of 10, if you talk to someone who had a different attitude about gay people or just gay in general, they have met someone in their life who has grown to be near and dear to their heart, or they've empathized with someone who, you know what I mean, that they've worked with. They've had a connection somehow with someone who has changed their mind. Their idea of a stereotype in a good way. Now, that can also have a negative, you know, I mean, it can have a negative effect totally, you know, hopefully people have good experiences, you know, because there are good people in the world. Not everybody's bad, but you know what I'm saying, though. I mean, that's how people have changed, and then just educating themselves.
Oh yeah, no, that definitely like kind of loops back to that to the answer you were giving earlier in that one question I asked about, you know, oh, what's the same, what's different?
Because in the old days, people probably didn't realize they were meeting someone who was gay. It's more open now.
It is different.
You know what I'm saying? You probably had someone gay in your life that you didn't realize that was gay, or didn't even pay attention to that fact because they didn't really draw attention to that. It's because in the old days you were afraid to do that, but things have gotten more open now, and more, you know, people are more willing to admit that they are. They're not staying in the closet like they used to. You get what I'm saying?
So, I do. Yeah. And no, that's
the closet thing is becoming a thing of the past.
Oh, I see. Yeah. No, that's all super interesting and relevant to, you know.
Well, and I think the suicide rate would be a lot higher if people were allowed to, you know, I mean, if people would educate themselves more, and the religious part of it, especially, you know, remember the fanatics that try to tell their child that they're you know, I mean, kind of like what my experience was, that I was going to go to hell. You know what I mean? It was, although mine wasn't as to the extreme that people take it, like trying to put children in conversion therapy and all that stupid bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to change a thing about who they are, you know. People just need to realize that, like Lady Gaga says, we're born this way.
I have some questions I want to ask real quick. So,
Well,
first, I have, like, basically only one more, like, sort of big picture actual question. But before I get to that, I want to give the floor back over to you and ask if there's just anything else that you wanted to mention, whether it's about, like, general sort of gay stuff or, you know, the country specifically, just anything where you're like, oh, I want to say this, or, oh, you didn't ask me about this. Is there just sort of anything? Yeah.
Do you think there's anything I haven't covered yet?
Not really, but I wanted to offer.
I talk a lot.
I didn't think so, but
go back and listen to it. I mean, I'm sorry. I have diarrhea of the mouth. I mean, I talk a lot, but I'm just a very open person. They
no,
tell
it's,
me at work
it's good for interviewing. It's good for interviewing.
Well, they tell me at work that I'm an open book. You know what I mean? So,
I see.
And that's part of, I guess, why they love me, you know, at work, because I'm just open and honest. And, you know, I mean, they know who I am, you know what I mean?
I see.
There's nothing there that's really hidden, you know what I'm saying, from view. So,
yeah.
But no, I don't think I have, I think I've covered pretty much everything. I mean, I've talked about politics of it. I've talked about the prejudices. I've talked about some of my own experiences.
Yeah.
Is there anything specific that you...
No, not at all. No, that's definitely just a catch-all question where... Well, I do have one more question, but this...
Okay.
When I was just saying, oh, is there anything else? That's just like something I always ask where... Just to make sure
there's
something that, you know...
I was just making fun. I didn't even realize that.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and give you that last question then, which, I mean, I guess in a way you've kind of already talked about, but we'll just throw it out there and see what happens. So yeah, you've been talking with me for, I guess, like an hour and 20, hour and a half.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
An hour and 20 minutes.
Wow, like we've been really doing it. And so an hour and 20 minutes talking about, you know, all kinds of things, mostly, you know, sort of gay related, and obviously quite a bit about the country, which, as you know, was, you know, several decades ago. And so I wanted to ask, how do you feel when you look back on the country, you know, especially after having talked with me about it for, you know, an hour and a half? When you look back at the country or Hidden Door, when you look back at the Hidden Door, what do you feel? What do you think right now?
To be young again. I would do a lot of the same things, but I mean, I wouldn't be the person I am had I not made some of the mistakes that I made. But I mean, to be honest, you have to make mistakes in life to gain knowledge and to learn. You know, if you live to tell the tale, you know, that is, unless it's something, you know, something so horrible that you don't survive it. But I'm here, you know, and I survived. And I sound like Gloria Gaynor now, don't I? I will survive. music was a big part of our, you know, music was the music. Oh, my God. The music they played in there was just, it was everything you ever wanted to hear. I probably didn't touch upon that, but we danced and danced and danced until we were drenched in sweat. You know, I mean, it was so much fun, that part of it, you know. I probably, if I look back on it now, I probably maybe wouldn't have maybe slept with as many women as I did. Because I kind of got a reputation, and I don't know how I got a reputation and other women didn't. You know, I kind of felt like I was being persecuted in a way, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know why, but I mean, I doubt that I slept with any more women than anybody else did. But because it just didn't seem that way to me when, you know, looking around, you know, but I don't know. It was an experience, and I guess I needed to have that experience, you know? I mean, I was young and curious and sowing my wild oats, and I had to find myself, and I'm a different person now. I don't, like I said, I haven't been with anybody for probably 15 years, you know. I'm a little bit more picky and choosy about who I'm with now. You know, having been in a few relationships where I have, that have failed, and that it, you just, for one reason or another, you know, I mean, I probably maybe wasn't ready for a relationship, you know, or the person that I was with probably wasn't ready. I probably would have done a few things maybe a little bit different, but I mean, who wouldn't, you know, in their life? I mean, can you honestly say that there's anything that you would, wouldn't change about your life as you've grown up? I mean, there's some things that you've done that you might not have done.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think everybody would probably make that statement, but like I said, I mean, it's made me who I am today, yeah, you know, I mean, and I live to tell the tale.
Yeah, so. Most certainly. And I mean, like you said, I like how you put the, like, I needed to have that experience. Like, this is just something you just needed to experience, this sort of like freedom, like with other women, essentially.
And I mean, I did almost have a nervous breakdown, and it was because of the first relationship that I had that failed. They were very domineering and abusive. And it just wasn't a good relationship. I jumped too quick. I left home and jumped into it, not knowing really all there was to know about the other person. I mean, it takes two to tango. You know, I'm responsible as well. They're not the only one responsible. But I did lose myself, and that's on me. You know what I'm saying? I got down to about 90 pounds and looked like shit, and I didn't know who I was anymore. But then I came home and I talked to my priest, and I started putting, you know, my life back together, and my personality, and my whole soul back together. You know what I'm saying? And so I had it was a come to Jesus moment.
Yeah. No, it really sounds like it was a lot of
come to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come to myself moment.
Come to myself.
That would have been something that I probably would have changed about that time in my life. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, I probably wouldn't be the person I am had I not experienced it, you know, and went through it and went to the other, you know what I mean? I mean, was on the other side looking at myself and thinking, God, what have you become? You know, look at where you were before and look where you have come out. You know, I was, to give you a little bit before we get off the phone, a little bit more background about myself. For all practical purposes, I was supposedly straight and a good little Catholic girl. You know what I'm saying? And I was, I did modeling for McAlpin's. I was on the teen board at McAlpin's. I emceed a couple of the back to school shows. We had back to school shows like fashion shows. You probably don't remember McAlpin's, but Dillard's bought out McAlpin's. McAlpin's was a mercantile. McAlpin's, if you do any research on McAlpin's, it was a mercantile store, fashion store.
Okay.
They carried much of the same things that Dillard's does, but it was called McAlpin's. And there were stores in Cincinnati and Louisville, and it was a mercantile store. I was on the teen board, and I was, popular at school, dressed up to the nines all the time, and they would make fun of me at school because I would dress up all the time, you know what I mean, and was so feminine and, you know, and all this, and then, you know, after I turned 19 and I went to college and I decided I was going to be gay, and then I left home and jumped into this relationship, it's like everything completely, I was in a totally different world. You know what I'm saying? It was just like a culture shock for me. The way that I did it, the way that it happened, it's my fault because I chose, you know, I made the decision to not come home. I led kind of a sheltered, you know, life until that point. And then it was like, welcome to the real world, yeah. You know?
And I mean, like I said, you know, it was late in life. You were also 19. That's really young.
Well, it's old compared to what some people have when they come out and they are kicked out of their home. You know what I'm saying? When I hear people's stories that I've talked to in my life, it's really sad. Some people are kicked out when they're 14 and 15 years old. I mean, I was kind of kicked out, but I was given an ultimatum. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of the same kind of situation, but I was older. But I grew up with my grandparents, and I led kind of a sheltered life. My grandmother didn't let me, hang out with the other kids like other kids and stuff. She kind of kept me from, you know what I mean? Like, I'd have to beg to spend the night with friends, you know? I mean, they raised me. My grandparents did. They legally adopted me from my mother and father divorced when I was a baby, and they signed their rights away. So my mother's parents adopted me, her parents, and raised me. My mother was an only child. And my mother, ironically enough, my mother's living with me now. My grandmother, I have the house that I grew up in. I inherited it. And my mother is living with me now. And my grandmother, her mother, is gone. And that's when I talk about my grandmother. She's still my grandmother, but she did raise me. It's kind of confusing, but you get the picture.
I do.
And I grew up in a house with my great-grandmother, my great-aunt, which was my grandmother's sister, which my great-aunt was my favorite person in the whole wide world. And she died in 2012 of colon cancer right here in this house. We had the hospice come back and forth. And my mom did what the hospice people would do. She, you know, when they give them the medicine and stuff, transition when you're in hospice, anyway, the palliative care, you know what I'm saying? And, but hospice would come back and forth and bring us supplies and stuff. But my aunt wanted to be here. She didn't want to go to a facility. You know that you can do that if you want to, don't you? Mm-hmm. When a parent or something, they can choose not to go to a facility, and you can have them in your house. And hospice can, they don't like it. It's not ideal for them. Mm-hmm. But if you have to have someone who's willing to do the things that they normally do, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a hospital bed. We were able to get a hospital bed, and because you have to have that kind of a, you know, where it raises up and down and everything. And she died of colon cancer. It was horrible. But she was my favorite person in the whole world. She understood me better than my grandmother did. She was the one that I went to the Strand Theater I was talking about every day, and I got to see movies. And saw Sound of Music over and over and over again, and sang at the top of my lungs in the theater. Every time I saw it, it was my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'm definitely starting to get like a better picture of, like, I don't know, just how different
who I am.
Well, yeah, that, and then also just the extremity of the change, though, like how extreme it is to go from and then suddenly you're in this world.
It was my fault for making a bad decision. You know, there were friends that worked with my aunt at McAlpin's. My aunt worked at McAlpin's. After she retired from the theater business, she went and worked at McAlpin's. That's how the McAlpin's thing kind of got in the picture. She was a switchboard operator at McAlpin's for like probably 25, 30 years after her career at the Strand. And she had two friends that were gay that worked in the shipping, like down in the, on the docks, you know, in the shipping department. Mm-hmm. That knew this girl that I got involved with, and they warned my aunt, she's bad news, she shouldn't get involved with her. But I did it anyway. So I was warned by the gay community not to, you know. And I'm not to badmouth this person, because but it was my fault just as much as it was hers, you know. I mean, I jumped into it, like I said, takes two to tango. You know, I'm mad at myself for making, you know, probably even more so than I was mad at her, you know what I mean, for being stupid and making a wrong decision. But perhaps I wouldn't be who I am today if I hadn't done it. I guess I had to do it.
Yeah, I hear you.
And if my young self, I probably would have done the same thing, you know what I'm saying, if I could stand here and see my young self and go back in time and try to, because people were trying to tell me not to get involved, and I did it anyway. So, and I hope that me talking about this won't make people who listen to this mad. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of people who knew this person that they didn't necessarily know the same side of this person that I did, because I was in a relationship with them. You know what I'm saying?
He
was very well liked in the community. But it just, my experience was not good. And, you know, that could have been partly my fault because of where I had come from. You know what I'm saying? And what I put myself into, you know, the situation. I don't know. I mean, it just, I was trying to meet people and talk to people, and I was told, I was accused of trying to get with people. You know what I'm saying? When I was just making friends. And it just all just escalated.
Oh, I see.
You know, I couldn't even talk to anybody. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in a relationship like that where somebody just was not, wouldn't let you be yourself.
I see. Yeah. It sounds like it was a pretty formative experience for you.
It was only a year.
Yeah.
It only lasted a year, but it was a long fucking year, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Sorry, my French, you know.
Oh, no, you're fine.
And like I said, it may offend some people that would hear this, you know, but some of the people were around to see it.
It's not like you're using names. So, I mean, if anyone recognizes who you're talking about,
well,
fine.
Trust me, they would, because they, you know, there's people in the community that know who I was with. So this is a small, it's a big town, but it's a very small community. And I don't mean to be mean, you know what I mean? I don't, like I said, I made the decision, but you know, I was young and stupid. So, but that's what my experience was, you know, whether it was my fault, you know, or partly if somebody else's fault as well. But I mean, it just was an experience.
Right. And I guess right now you're
something
showing
that I'll never forget. Let's just put it that way. I will not forget it, because I, like I said, I almost had a nervous breakdown and I lost myself. And I choose to remember it because I don't ever want to be that person again. You know?
Yeah. Right.
I won't ever let anybody do that to me ever again.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Absolutely.
So don't ever let anybody ever do that to you where you lose yourself in a relationship. Okay. Always be true to yourself. You know, I mean, always be true to yourself.
Yeah. That made me a little emotional for some reason, but yeah.
Because if somebody tries to change you, darling, they don't love you. If someone loves you, they do not try to change you. They love you for who you are. You know, and you have to recognize this what love is. You know what I'm saying? If you don't love yourself enough and you look for love from other, you know, I think that's probably what I was doing at the time. I was looking for love from other people, and I really didn't know myself well enough at the time. Probably that probably played into it as well, because I was confused.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've admitted that I was confused. And so that played into it, but you have to know how to love yourself before you can love somebody else. Remember I said that at the beginning of our
I was actually about to say that. Yeah, I remembered that you said that earlier.
Well, now I'm tying it all together for you.
You're tying it in a little bow. You really tied it up for me.
I'm a lesbian guru. So if you ever need any advice, I'm here for you to talk to. If you need any relationship advice, or if you ever want, if it needs somebody to talk to, don't just think that you've made a friend. Okay. And don't just think that, I'm just an interview subject. Okay. I'm here if you need to talk about anything ever. Okay.
My lesbian guru.
And I mean that sincerely. I don't mean that in any kind of I'm not flirting with you. I'm not trying to do a hookup or anything like that. I just mean that in general. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because I know what I went through and I know what people are capable of. You know what I'm saying? And I've had a couple different, that's not the only relationship I've had that where I was manipulated. And people are masters at manipulation, you know? I mean, they really are. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
thank you for that sincere offer.
Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. And we got our contacts and stuff. You got my number and all that.
Okay.
And also, thank you for being an open book. Thank you for being willing to dive into your memories like that, you know, and to like really go deep into it. I really got a lot out of this interview, like one as an interview, but also just two, you know, as an experience. Yeah. And so what will happen is we'll finish this up and probably tomorrow I will text you. And what I'll do is I'll ask for your mailing address. Cause there is like a permission form that like I have to sign.
Yeah.
And sign. So I'll get your mailing address. That way I can mail that to you. There's also a 5-question like post interview survey that's online. It takes like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I'll send you that link tomorrow. So you will hear from me very soon.
Okay.
Does that sound okay?
Yeah, thank you, Miss Adrienne.
Thank you. Yeah.
I enjoyed this, and I mean, I reminisced and got philosophical, and
yeah. What more can you ask for?
And talk to a lesbian sister.
Yes, this is true. This is true. All right, Jackie. Well, thank
you. I hope I gave you some good advice or some good things to leave this with, you know, not.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. Okay.
Yeah. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Oh, and you didn't tell me how old you are. How old are you?
You're going to be surprised. Let me guess. You're going to be surprised. I'm 30.
I was going to guess 26. So I would have been kind of close. I didn't think you were that, you know, like a youngster, because you don't talk like a youngster. You know what I mean? But.
Uh-huh.
No, I mean, seriously, I mean, and I couldn't, when I saw you on the video thing, I knew you had to be, I thought you were in your 20s, so, but you are 30?
Yeah, like 30 as of this past August, so it's recent. Yeah, I knew you'd be a little smart.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. All right, Jackie, I've got to head out here, but I will reach out to you tomorrow, and we'll stay in touch.
I'm sorry I kept you so long.
Oh, no, you're all good. I just got another interview I got to do. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll reach out, and you have a good evening, okay?
You too, sweetheart. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.